What's up, bro? You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, I'm coming through clear. I don't have a. I was gonna say I don't have a name for the show yet. I figured something corny out. I don't know. But all right. So what I'm gonna do? We'll do the show and then I'll go back and edit all of this out and just have it start.
Okay. Perfect.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the NBA podcast for the IBN Sports Network. We are doing our introductory, podcast for the 2020-2021 season. It's a little delayed like everything else. I just honestly wanted to make sure we were going to have a season after we heard about James Harden and him pretty much attempting to shut the league down through his strip club, I guess, tour. Either way, we are here. I'm your host, IBS Yeezus. I got my co-host with me, Corey Carlton. Corey, can I ask you a question?
You sure can.
Why don't you ever host these NBA shows when you know more about the NBA than me? I should be the co-host.
Because the host don't get to talk as much.
Yeah, I guess that's
you
true.
Don't get
that's
to
true.
Give us takes as much.
Hey, look. Also want to say, since I got you on right now, I'm not scared of you, bro. I'm going to win one of these DFS contests. I'm going to do it without Russell Westbrook in my lineup.
Well, you're already starting down 60 points if you don't get him.
Bro, I honestly don't know what happened last night. Blake Griffin had 20 points in, like, the first half, and then he had that little snowflake thing beside him that he was cold. And I was like, what is going on? Why is he still stuck at, like, 20 minutes, and then they said he had a concussion. I'm like, the dude just came back. It's three games.
All I'm saying is when you roster Blake Griffin, if you don't think injury is a possibility, then I don't know what to tell you.
Just give me a – I figured if I play it early, it'd make more sense to do it in December than to wait till like March or April. Then for sure he ain't going to be healthy. But how are we in a year – where I can I can't even depend on Anthony Davis now. He got hurt the other night.
I was about to say, you can't depend on him.
Golly, man. Frail body one and frail body two, man. But look, today is LeBron James' birthday. Happy birthday, LeBron James. Much to Chase's disgust, we will start the show talking about the King, and I think he's, what, 36 now? Looking at Jimmy Butler and how he started this season a little nicked up. And we've talked about this off the record about how championship runs tend to take a lot out of people. Is it not a testimony to LeBron's preparation as an athlete that he is still able to play at such a high level at a time where we've traditionally seen people decline?
Yeah, I mean, it's unprecedented, man. Like, and you're talking about him playing more minutes than anyone ever at this point, when you include playoff minutes and all that. And it's unprecedented. And it's just preparation, obviously. They say he spends $1 million on his body at a time. Like, him and Tom Brady are maximizing science. And when you maximize science and you have the money to and you have the discipline to take care of your body, then this is the results. He can't do it forever, obviously, but he's also, give him the credit, man. He's gotten the skill to go with it. So LeBron is a very competent to good shooter now. There was a time where that was the huge weakness in his game. Now he plays more of an old man game. It's more style. It's more methodical. He's doing 1 foot fadeaways, Dirk style. Like, you have to give that man his credit. He has evolved his game with the time as well, in addition to just taking care of his body.
Yeah, I think it's funny that that I've gotten to the point where I watch people play, and I'm like, is that – because he did that the other night when they were playing – it was the game – it was Christmas. It was the Christmas game.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, did he just do a Dirk fadeaway? Like, what? But, yeah, he has evolved, and he's always been a very intelligent athlete, mm-hmm. Something that – even to this day, people don't tend to give him enough credit for is him using his brain combined with his athletic ability. And I'm at a point now as a fan where I can say that when he's gone, when he's officially done, I will miss him and what he brought to the game. He's not my GOAT, which is fine because GOAT is one of the most debated things in all the sports, across all sports. So it's really not an issue. But if he's not in your top three, I gotta ask what year you were born before I tell you that you're stupid. Because unless
he's not
in
your top three after last year, your list is void.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah, I mean, I would give some of these old heads a somewhat of a pass because they're just stuck in their ways. But our age and younger, man, you gotta have him in your top three. So, and I look forward to him working as an ambassador for the sport of basketball, much like Kobe did after he was retired. And obviously, Kobe's no longer with us, but I truly believe that LeBron James will fulfill that role and carry that with him once he retires and be a true ambassador of the sport.
I think Bron is definitely going to want to go to ownership track. I think he's setting up everything to be an owner. So
that'd be great,
he'll stay in the game.
I hope he's a much better owner than my boy Jordan. Oh, and yes,
well,
he's
already had his run in practice and putting teams together, so it couldn't be the same.
Yeah. That's true too. He's definitely a talent evaluator for sure. And yes, I have the Oklahoma Florida game on mute in the background. And I just saw that pick six, so that was my reaction. I apologize, you guys, if he came here just for basketball, but we don't have to go over the greatest moments of LeBron or whatever, because we can do that when he retires. We all know there's plenty of great moments. Let's get more into the current situation in the NBA. So let's start with the bubble hangovers. There's a lot of people that were hype on some guys that balled out in the small sample size that we had in Florida with the bubble. And one of the dudes that I've been looking at these first couple games that I was higher on than you were when we were talking about bubble play and things last year was Jamal Murray. Are you a little concerned that Jamal Murray isn't taking that step forward or building off that momentum in the bubble?
Well, I don't think Jamal Murray can take that step. Like, I just don't think he can ever be consistently that guy. He always shows flashes of this, but he's just he's a streaky, really good combo guard, and there's just a ceiling on that. And he can't play that way for 82 games. He can't play that way for any extended amount of time. He's not a 40, 50, 90 guy. That's what he was in the bubble. He will never be like that. Can he be like that for 20 games because he's hot and all of the games are in a row, so he's hot? Sure. And he even had some inconsistency in the bubble. But he is not a 50, 40, 90 guy. So I just don't see how that translates. Like, that just wasn't ever going to be the case, in my opinion.
Yeah, I looked at his career numbers and then, you know, obviously the small sample size of the three games. And I was watching the game the other night. The Nuggets were playing the Clippers. And his coach even said, you know, that historically he's been a slow starter. Every season that he's played in the NBA, he's just started slow. So the coach is like, look, I mean, he was blunt with him. Like, look, man, if you want to be the star that you were in the bubble, you gotta come better than this. And it almost seemed like, you know, sometimes you watch these, like, young guards, they kind of run from the game more so than control the game. And that's kind of what it seemed like to me. Like, everybody else is playing in their element, giving energy. Porter is doing what he's doing. Jokic doing what he's doing. And they're literally begging Jamal Murray, like, give me something, man. And I think he only had about 7 or 9 points for the first three quarters. Then he finally got hot. And like you say, streaky. He ended up with about 21 or so. But the Nuggets won't get over the hump of being taken seriously as a contender until they get more production out of him. And if they can't get it out of him, what do they do? Like, because, I mean, they're kind of at that point where they've got to invest in Jokic and somebody in the backcourt. Do they let Murray go and invest in Porter Jokic and try to find another guard to pair with them or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be Michael Porter has to be the guy. I mean, he's 6'11". He's a lethal scorer. He has to be the guy that can play with a Durant or LeBron on any given night, and Murray's your third guy. I mean, I think that's the recipe for success is Porter taking that 1B slot to Jokic, and I think they're going to hit their ceiling. It's about Porter's development. I don't think we're going to see Bubble Murray ever as a elongated thing. Like, you want him to be the hot guy that he – I mean, he has a lot of C.J. McCollum in him to me, right? Like, C.J. McCollum can be look like the best player on the floor for three games in a series, but you can't build a team around him. And we saw some of that even from C.J. when Portland went to the finals. It was him. I mean, the conference finals, it was CJ that was getting them through that hump and over that hump. And Dame was even taking a backseat some. So I think Murray gives you similar to that. But similar to Portland, if that's your second best player, you're going to have some trouble because they just can't do it. They're too small. Like, you can't have guards that small who aren't athletic and don't get to the free throw line a bunch. You can't have them trying to score you 30 points per game every game in the playoffs or for an 82-game season. It just doesn't work. They're too small.
Yeah, and I'm watching the team. You know, I watched a couple of their games, and I wonder if it's just Porter just kind of trying not to step on toes, or if it's just his attitude. He just seems disinterested sometimes. I will give him credit. The first couple games that I've seen, he definitely looks like he's more aware of his assignments on defense and put more energy to that. But it's like, I don't know if he doesn't want to step on Murray's toes and take more shots or take over the game, but he's good, man. It's like, dude, help somebody out. Like, Jokic is literally doing what he can, and bless his heart, he's came in shape and still giving them solid numbers for a big. But like you said, there's this question of, or we're getting to that point where we're going to start asking, who is the number two in Denver? And what do we do strategically to build around that person and Jokic? Because obviously Jokic is a key part, but there's still – we need that answered in order for them to get to the next step. Because I look at the roster, and the roster is not terrible, and there's guys on that team – that know their role and play their role and don't complain about it. And they've added a vet or two, and those vets have come in and played their role, not complained about it. So it's all the elements there to be a good team, but they really need somebody in that backcourt or another scorer to really get to that next level.
Yeah, and I think you saw Porter come out last game when Murray sat, right? Like, Porter went off, 30-10, and he actually got to play 40 minutes, whereas some of these games are getting 25, 29 minutes with Murray. So it's like the offense still is a two-man game with Murray and Jokic, and he doesn't know where to fit, and he's abysmal on defense. Like, this is a prime case of somebody just, like, being too dominant in high school, only getting three college games, and he just had no concept of team defense. So that's really hard, especially in a playoff series. So he still has some growing to do, still some learning and some development, but the Nuggets will only be a real contender if Porter's that guy.
Yeah, and so in keeping track of people from the bubble and expectations, or trying to have reasonable expectations, I'm not trying to bash Luka, because I know we've got a reputation for bashing Luka. We're just not as high on him as Dallas fans. But my man is shooting 12% in three games from three-point range. He's averaging less than one made three on five attempts per game. Now, obviously, he's got to carry way more scoring when Porzingis is out. But he didn't shoot the ball well last year, and we talked about that. He hasn't – I don't know if – again – the more I watch the guy play, the more I see James Harden in him, and the more people get mad saying that. But I rag on James Harden a lot last year for his awful three-point shooting. But his stat line always reads good. It's always 25-plus. It's always 6 or 7 rebounds and assists per game, and that's great. But what are we doing with this efficiency, man? Is this a concern for Dallas going forward? Does anybody really care? Am I just overreacting?
No, I don't think you're overreacting. I mean, I have said it a bunch. Like, why do people call Luka a shooter besides the fact he's white? Like, this isn't an anomaly. He's never shot over 33% from three. He's been in the league for 3 years. And he shoots 7 to 8 a game. Well, this isn't a small sample size. This is, he's just a non-shooter. And I don't know why people, like, this is what, why when I say the things about getting a pass is, like, anybody else shoots at this volume, like, starting to mimic some of the Westbrook years that people called him an awful shooter and a ball hog, but Luka will never get that kind of title. So, I mean, he's just fat. He'll play his way into shape, and these stat lines will look a little bit better. But my man's taking 21 shots a game. Like, we got to call a spade. That dude is a ball-dominant, high-usage, non-shooter who is very skilled and a very good all-around offensive player, but he's a chucker and a bricklayer. We got to keep it real. We got to be honest. We got to keep it fair.
I agree, and I wonder where do we go from here as a team from Dallas?
Hopefully people stop with these he's the MVP thing going this year, yeah. And people are saying he's the MVP thing. People gotta stop. There's holes in his game. He's not an MVP level guy. He's just not. And people gotta stop with that. He's just not. Luka's not close to top five. He's not close to as good as Harden, AD, LeBron, Giannis, Durant, like any of those guys. He's not sniffing them. He's not close.
Bro, he was the favorite, the betting favorite for MVP. That is wild. In his second season? Is it his third season?
I mean, but you know what it is, man. You know what it is.
That's crazy.
White Heat time.
I mean, that's just crazy. Like, ahead of LeBron, ahead of AD, ahead of Kawhi Leonard.
Back-to-back MVP, Giannis.
Yeah, Giannis, yeah. Curry's coming back. All these other people. And he's the vote getter, or the leading candidate, sorry, or the betting favorite for MVP. I just think that was just wow. I like the Dallas makeup, and I know we've got our big teams, our big market teams, the Lakers, Celtics, et cetera, these people that we're accustomed to seeing in championship runs and so forth and so on. Dallas has been building something for a little while. Luka is the centerpiece for that. Porzingis, if he can stay healthy, is also a plan as well. Who do you think they need to add, or what type of player do they need to add to this mix to really make it official?
I really like Josh Richardson a lot. I like that. That's a 3-and-D guy next to him. I think they just need to see Porzingis, and I mean, they need somebody that's going to be an actual secondary ball handler. Luka can't have the ball in his hands. It's never going to be a recipe for winning. Like Harden, Westbrook, anyone that's done it, like to that high of usage, it does not work. So, I mean, they just need another guy. Like, Porzingis and Luka is not a good enough two to get you over anything. So if they mix that with, like, a class of role players that are just good, not over the top, then you don't get a winner. And everyone's like, Dallas has this historic offense, and everyone went over and over and over again how they won the best offenses ever last year. But if you look at the clutch time, they were one of the bottom third in the league in clutch time efficiency. So when the game got close and defenses got tight and people actually started trying on defense, you saw completely different teams. So a lot of this is just fool's ball, honestly.
Yeah, and it's funny to me that Luka stylistically is the type of player that Mark Cuban has more or less hinted that he doesn't like, that he preferred European players because they played the game the right way, basically, is what he has kind of hinted to saying maybe a couple years back. But, hey, like you said, it's not a recipe that's really gets you over the hump. And God, you said Westbrook, I was saying Harden, but now I kind of do see it. I don't want to put that on anybody to call him Westbrook. It just seems kind of cruel at this point, which we'll get to him at some point. I know you got a defense for him, but I'm not trying to disrespect Luka, and I say that because we only got like three people who really are Mavericks fans, and I don't want to lose them, but your boy ain't all he's cracked up to be. The percentages are god awful. And if it wasn't for those probably 10 free throw attempts per game, we probably would see a lot more talk of him on a decline, actually. And Junior, he's our main Mavericks guy in the group. I haven't heard much talk about it, but he did say that Luka came in overweight, and I saw on Twitter Fat Luka and all this other hashtag stuff. I'm not buying that. He doesn't look like he's that overweight. He probably is out of shape, but he doesn't look like he's that overweight. And James Harden came in probably more out of shape than anybody in the league, and he picked up right where he left off. So I don't really want to hear that.
Harden used to being fat, though. That's different.
Luka's like, he's like 19, man. He'll be all right. Like, you can handle that when you're that age.
I don't know what being fat got to do with missing jump shots. I thought that's when you could hit jump shots, the fatter you get.
I thought it was, too. Word to Carmelo. Hey, look, so who do you think that was a bubble baller that is in for a very rude awakening? Like, they're going to have a long season, and it ain't going to be like the bubble. So out of the few that we've talked about and just people that come in mind in general, is there anybody that you think?
You know who come to mind. You know who come to mind.
Who?
Your mans who taking a back seat and doing the right thing and letting CJ cook.
Bruh, he did all right the last game, man. Look, I'm not trying to hear that nonsense, bro. Dame Lillard will be fine. He's proven to be a competitor, and obviously he's going through some things right now, but I think he's just kind of trying to allow CJ more control of the offense, and I'm fine with that because he needs to.
I mean,
help.
You
want to
know who it is. If we're really going to talk about who it is, it's a layup, but it's TJ Warren. Like, TJ
yeah.
Warren's not that guy, and he's not going to be that guy, and that is what that is. So if we're really going to say who it is, it's TJ Warren for sure.
Yeah, I was getting to that too because people were high on TJ Warren. I haven't even heard his number called, much less anything. And I think they had a series or a couple games against the Celtics. But, yeah, to me, it was TJ Warren. I know people might look at stat lines and ask what's going on with Devin Booker, but the last game, if you watch, I watched that game too. They obliterated the Pelicans, so he really didn't have to do anything. I think he had like 9 points, but he was just chilling. He didn't need to do anything. So I think – what I would like to see this season is that I want to see Devin Booker get the credit that he's due for just being a better ball player than people want to give him credit for. I've seen him try to play harder defense this year. I guess that's Chris Paul influence or just him maturing in general. But it seems like he has some energy to him this year where he really wants to win. And the Suns seem to have a little bit more energy where they're really trying to win as well. So I want them to kind of be the team that people start talking about, and Devin Booker kind of get his due. Do you get that vibe from them the first couple games or so forth?
I mean, they started off to a hot start last year. I definitely think that, like, Booker has always floated in and out of defense. Like, he gives up eventually just because, like, organizational stuff. But yeah, Booker's extremely underrated. A lot of the guys that get talked about aren't as good as Devin Booker in basketball, and I think Chris Paul is everything they wanted Ricky Rubio to be: common influence, like leadership for the young guys, making sure everyone's in the right place. Like, Chris Paul's not going to make Devin Booker a better basketball player by any stretch of imagination, but what he will do is he'll make Cam Johnson a better basketball player. He'll make DeAndre Ayton a better basketball player. He'll get them in the right spots. He'll be in there in the clutch time to make sure people are in the right places and get good shots. So they lose a lot of close games historically, so I think Chris Paul definitely is what they needed from an organizational standpoint. So all in favor of that. But, yeah, I think he has to start getting – mentioned in certain things, and I think if his stats are going to go down just because he doesn't have the ball in his hands as much. But we'll see in these close games. I actually saw him in one of the close games. I forget which game it was, and he started going lights back-to-back with somebody. But, yeah, you'll start to see when they get on TV in close games, Booker will start to get his credit.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, that's all I really want, man, is my boy to get his credit. I know NBA is a lot like college football. where there are certain teams people don't get to see because they don't stay up late enough to watch them, and they're not on, like, the main TV stations, so they don't get a lot of ESPN run. But the Suns, I think, are an interesting team, and I hope that people pay a little bit more attention to them. Rolling back real quick, because I meant to ask you this when we were talking about Luka, and I wanted to also run this into the next segment, but Trae Young is balling, all right? And I think we kind of knew that was coming anyway, but there was such a big deal made out of the trade at the time of the draft, and seeing how Luka started out and then how Trae kind of took some time to get acclimated, and his team obviously took some time to get the right pieces around him. But we are in year three, and it looks like Trae is taking some major steps. Who do you think is going to be the ultimate winner of this trade in, let's say, maybe two more years when we're year five? Who do you see looking like they came out on top?
I still think it's Dallas. But sometimes I hate when people do this. Sometimes a trade can be good for both people. Like, mm-hmm. I think Atlanta needs Trae Young. Like, that city, like, what he represents there, his flashiness, like, the attraction, what Atlanta stands for. Like, sometimes it's just good for both teams. And, like, the only reason I won't say Atlanta didn't win the trade is because they didn't hit on the next pick. So if you get another first, you got to hit. And I just don't think Cam Reddish or DeAndre Hunter, whoever, whichever one of those they got from that Dallas pick is it. So that would be my one thing. If one of them pans out, then I'll side with them. But as is, I would slightly give the edge to Luka in 2 years. But they've done a great job with Trae. Like, they did what you're supposed to do. They give him a backup run, backup in Rondo, who can help stabilize the team. They can even play together if need be. They give him space with shooters. They got so many shooters. They got Horder and Bogdan and Gallinari and Reddish. And it's just, you give Trae Young that much shooting and then two rim rollers and Collins and Capella, and you can't stop that offense. And that's why you see his efficiency up, because you can't do anything with that.
Yeah, and
it looks like he's shutting down Kyrie tonight. I'm not watching the game, but if he is guarding Kyrie and Kyrie 1-for-10, somebody got to talk to Jamal, because you can't let Trae Young shut you down.
I'm not maybe Kyrie didn't have his sage tonight. But it's 68-67. I'm looking at it right now. 68-67. Trae's doing Trae things. 5-for-10 from field goal. 0-2 on the three pointers. But he's 6-6 at the free throw line. So he's got 16 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists. I mean, he's active. So, what's Kyrie's stat line? Kyrie just he's just having an off night, man. 1-for-10, 0-for-5 from 3. Jesus Christ. All right. I was gonna say how are they in this game? But I see Joe Harris is getting off, and Kevin Durant obviously doing what Kevin Durant does.
Yeah. I'm about to say they got that Durant fella.
Yeah,
he's pretty
good.
Durant,
God, I hate to say he's amazing, but dude, every time he get the ball and he shoots, I'm just like, God, do you ever miss? Like, what? It's got to be the most frustrating assignment for some people, man, because you're. Generally, the people who are big enough to guard him are not quick enough. Even with him coming off the injury, I mean, you're not going to put Clint Capella on him. He'll kill him. And the people who are quick enough to guard him, he just shoots over top of you. Hell, he's shooting over top of your center, too, so it don't matter. And it's literally automatic. He's shooting 40% right now, and I would consider that an off night.
No,
which would be... Which would be Luka's best night right now.
Facts.
All right, I did throw that in there. That was slander. Another side note that was that since I'm looking at the scores, Boston Celtics tonight were a 2-point favorite playing Memphis without Ja. I don't know who set that line. I don't know if that was an accident. It had to be an accident because on my bookie it was 2, 2.5. When I checked Action Sports Network, it was like 9, 9.5, which seemed more accurate. But I kid you not, that line closed on my bookie at 2. So if anybody listens to this podcast, if you bet that, let me know if they paid that out, because that just seemed off.
Yeah, no, that definitely seems off.
So speaking of Ja, let's talk about our two studs from last year, or two guys that everybody was hype about the draft that come up a lot. We've got Zion in New Orleans, and we got Ja in Memphis. Ja's hurt right now, which, you know, hopefully he'll be back in a couple weeks. Who do you see taking a step for, or the bigger step, in their sophomore season?
So I'm starting to wonder what Zion maxes out at. I don't know if that's fair, but I'm starting to wonder what it's really going to get. Like, I love what I see. He's obviously amazing. And, like, will he ever truly be as good as Anthony Davis is right now? Because what I saw from Ja these first two games, and it's not about, like, how well he played. It's just about what I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like he might have been the best point guard in the league. No exaggeration.
I'm a big Ja fan, so I'm gonna jump right off there with you. When he decided at some point this offseason that he was gonna be more aggressive, and you combine that with what I think is also a very intelligent basketball player, his athleticism is off the chart for his size, and the way he's been attacking, it's been a thing of beauty, man. Like, he really was looking like he was about to tear the league up, and his team was just going to be trash, but he's going to tear the league up.
So I think I might side with Ja if I'm getting asked that question, just based on the development, because, like, I love Zion. I really do, but I'm just starting to think, like, he's really good, but, like, I don't know, man. See a guy you can give the ball and go get me a buck in the half court? Like, I just don't know that you can build an offense around Zion. And they don't have to in New Orleans because they have Brandon Ingram, who's sleeping. But I don't know. And I don't like the way that team's built. It's gross.
Yeah. I wonder how much of it is upper management holding him back, man. I feel like Zion's never been allowed to really play freely. There's always some like minute limit, or like, this is almost like they're just coddling him. I don't know why. I mean, just let him run, man. I also still hate that sometimes when I watch them, it feels like they still don't have an offense for him. Like, he still kind of got to fit in, which is weird to me because he's the best player on the team, if you ask me, most nights. So I don't know. And also wonder if him and Ingram will truly work. I like Ingram. I just wonder if Ingram sometimes forgets that he's got Zion as a teammate. Like, he's got another complement to his ability. You know,
I think Ingram would be fine if you didn't have the backcourt be Eric Bledsoe and Lonzo. You can't have all those non-shooters. And Ingram's not a shooter. He's like a one-on-one, like, mid-range flasher, but I wouldn't call him a shooter, even though he's gotten better at shooting. And then you have Steven Adams. It's just like horrible spacing. It's like the Sixers all over again with Simmons and Embiid almost. Like, they just occupy too much of the same space. They both want the ball at the same places. Like, they both want to get to the rim. Like, where's the spacing?
Yeah, and then they're not playing defense either. And they go through these lulls. They're a young team, but the lulls also kill me too. Like, who's the leader on the team, you know? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Again, the Pelicans are not a finished product. We both know they're still trying to, you know, build a roster around Ingram and Zion, I would assume. But some of the moves I do kind of scratch my head at. Because didn't they go big to pick up somebody or
– Yeah, Steven Adams.
Yeah, Adams. Like, what?
No, they traded away their big person. They traded away Holiday.
Yeah. All right, so they traded away Drew. Somebody else went big to get Drew.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we'll see what they do, man. I would like for Ja and Zion to get on competitive teams. I would hate to see them wasted away and then end up on a Laker or Boston team later when it's too late and they're past their primes. They gave their best years to these sorry franchises, but Memphis definitely has a lot of work to do. So we'll get there eventually, I guess. Let's see. The next thing we're going to talk about, because I'm running through this list. Oh, let's talk about James Harden. I don't think it'd be fair if we went a whole show and didn't talk about James Harden and the mess that is Houston. You are a unwilling participant in this nonsense because you were a Westbrook fan and he got traded. I really think that James Harden should give this a chance, man. I know some people don't want to hear it, but with Christian Wood playing halfway decent these three games, which is an understatement, he's playing amazing these three games. The fact that John Wall's coming back, and we both acknowledge off the record that he looked healthy in the preseason, and then you got DeMarcus Cousins, who I would assume would play his role without any like, you know, issues. Should he give this team a chance, man?
What's their record, dog? They 0-2. What chance? Like, this is what he's talking about.
They're 0-2 without Wall and Cousins. I mean, you got two other guys coming back.
I know, man, but
they don't have Eric Gordon either.
He knows he can drop 35 a game and win 50 games and lose. Like, he doesn't want it all on him. Like, I think that's where he's at with this. Like, I don't want to have to be the guy every time we need a bucket in the postseason. That will still be the case. He's just tired of it. And, like, he saw what he did for KD. Like, there was nothing else KD could do besides win a championship. There's nothing else James Harden can do for his legacy besides win a championship. He has what he has. He's done the, like, people say he's one of the best scorers ever. There is nothing he can do for his legacy besides win a championship. Nothing. So, like, if that's something he cares about, like, I get why he wants to get out.
I guess I respect it
because, like, and this is so blown out of proportion, man. James Harden's not going to strip clubs because he wants to get traded and he's trying to make a fuss. James Harden's going to strip clubs because that's what James Harden does.
Yeah.
Like, let's stop the sensationalism just because some blogs are picking it up and then SportsCenter's running with it. Like, this is what Harden does. This is what he would do, whether he was holding out, whether he was not. Houston is open. That man is not about to sit in his house from his first love, strip club, or in order to not get fined. He don't care about no 50 grand to get at the strippers. He just gave a little baby 100 grand. You think a dude, he gave another grown man 100 grand. You think he care about $50,000 fine? Like, y'all got to stop with that nonsense. That man shows up fat all the time, and he gives you 40. Like, he does what he does. Like, y'all got to chill on that nonsense.
Well, like I said, too, I mean, he's got the 7th best shoe deal in the league. They could find him all he want, and he would still be rich. He's perfectly taken care of.
Anybody that turned down $50 million a year don't care about your 50 grand fine.
Yeah, that's true. So, where do we put James Harden? Where does he go?
I don't think he's going anywhere until the offseason. I think that
they were very clear. Let's say, hypothetically, we get to the offseason. He hasn't been traded. If you're James Harden, what are your options that you're hoping to have? Like, who are you looking to join?
I mean, I think what eventually happens is one of these teams that are like, we're not trading our guy, falls out. Superstars fall out all the time. So between Kyrie and KD, PG and Kawhi, Simmons and Embiid, one of them will be disgruntled. You pick up one of those and you give them some picks and call it a day. Like, that's inevitable. So between those three, somebody will bite. I'm not sure what happened with this Miami deal, but that seemed fair. I'm not sure if Houston just wanted too much, but, like, if we're talking about a package that starts with Tyler Hero and he's the focal point, then Miami should have did that deal yesterday. If they can keep Bam, and you got Bam, Jimmy, Duncan Robinson, and you're just giving Tyler Hero and a bunch of picks and Kendrick Nunn and all the rest of those young dudes, then Miami should have pulled the trigger on that.
Are people still high on Nunn?
On Tyler Hero?
No, on Nunn.
Oh, no, I don't think so, but, I mean, he's not for a trade piece. he's equivalent of like another late first.
Okay. I think,
you know, I would love to see Hardnett actually. I don't know that they have the capital, but I would love to see him in Atlanta.
Lou Williams would no longer be a legend.
No, you put James Harden and Trae Young in the same backcourt and surround them with some shooters.
That would be wild.
It's entertaining.
No, for sure, it definitely is. That would be wild. So Harden's probably out. Is there any preference to stay in the West for Harden? Because if we're talking about the path to a championship, what is the path of least resistance right now? Because Brooklyn, I mean, they got a roster, they got a squad this year, and as long as KD and Kyrie are together, you would assume you're going to have to go through them at some point. LeBron and AD are still in LA. What is the path of least resistance for James Harden? Which conference?
I mean, I think if the team, it depends on what team he's on, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I think if you just trade him for Simmons straight up, I like Philly as much as I like Brooklyn.
Do you consider Golden State?
What, I mean, have you seen Wiggins and Oubre play?
Yeah.
One of those two. I mean, I guess Wiseman is helping his stock, right? So, like, I mean, you can throw Wiseman in there.
I'm not saying that as in a trade. I'm talking about offseason. Like, if he makes it to the offseason and he's basically like, yeah, I can pick whoever I go to.
Yeah, I mean, I think they still have to work out some sort of trade for him. So, I mean, I don't know, man. I heard he opened up his search to Portland. Like, I heard a lot of stuff, man, and I don't know what to believe at this point. I think they're just going to keep the man. I think realistically it comes down to Miami or Philly, because I don't think Brooklyn has enough. Like, I don't – why would Houston take a package centered around Caris LeVert? I'd legitimately rather let James Harden walk and start over.
I would, too, if that's the case. Like, the Brooklyn thing, I just felt like they were going to try to hustle anyway. I really thought their best trade partner, if they could work something out, was going to be Miami, but I'm not sure if you're the Rockets, I'm not sure you can justify having that trade and not attempting to add Bam to the mix.
No, I agree.
Yeah, just like if you're trading him to the 76ers, you're getting Simmons, but you know, got to be a little something else to sweeten the pot. So I still want to see him give him a chance, though, man. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being optimistic. And it's funny to hear me actually want to root for the Rockets. But I think Christian Wood has an interesting story, and he's playing pretty well these first couple games. I would like to see him continue to be successful. And then I just want to see what it looks like with my guy John Wall, because ultimately I want to be able to look at you and tell you that John Wall is better than Russell Westbrook.
Sure.
But you'll never admit that. Even if John Wall walked on water, you would never admit that. But I just want to have that as a talking point. I know you like
John,
him,
man.
But
like
you ain't
him.
you like your brother too, but you're not gonna take your brother over Russell Westbrook in anything either.
No, I mean, John Wall's a poor man's Westbrook. We all know that.
So, switching over, we're going to wind this down with our closing question. What are your most interesting storylines heading into January? Because this is, in fact, going to be the 2020 wrap-up. We're not going to come back again before 2021. So we've got NBA moving into 2021. There is no bubble. Do you foresee a bubble coming? I heard G League's going to try to do a bubble. Is there any other storylines that you're looking forward to for the next month?
Yeah, I mean, I think we got to keep our eye on what team starts off slow and goes to make a real run for Harden. I think if we see some teams at the All-Star break really struggling, we could see Harden. We got to keep an eye on Brooklyn, man. They're 2-2. Like, we got to keep an eye on that. If they're, I could see them flipping Kyrie if they're hovering around 500 at the All-Star break. So got to keep an eye on Brooklyn, keep an eye on Philly, keep an eye on the James Harden shooting stakes. And I'm really interested to see what the Clippers do. Are they going to be able to really lock down, like, now that Harrell's gone, now that Doc's gone, really go coast to coast, and if we can see the Clippers team that we saw in the past, and will Golden State get it together? Those are my biggest things that I see. I think that the Lakers are going to be in coast mode. We're not going to see anything from them. But will we see Golden State get it together to the point where it's like, all right, once they get Klay back, this is a team that is going to be a contender next year.
Oubre finally made a shot that wasn't a layup or a free throw. So it's trending in the right direction, at least. I think his first, what, three games, he didn't make a shot, like an actual shot, which is absolutely wow. I mean, and I'm not trying to big up Oubre, but I've been a fan for a couple of years. He ain't that bad.
But yeah, I think he's not.
My storyline would be obviously, who are the Warriors, is it that we have to wait for Draymond to come back, or is it that we need Draymond and Klay? Can they sustain without Klay, or can they hold on until they get Klay back? And then out in the East, I mean, not so much. Obviously, like you say, we got to keep an eye on the Nets, who are trailing by 5 right now to the Hawks. But Atlanta, the Hawks, are they as good as they're playing right now? Can they sustain? Can they keep that going? Can they get back to being a major player in the East? And then I'm still stuck on LaMelo Ball in the Charlotte Hornets. They're a young team. I'm just curious as to whether or not they can continue to play scrappy and turn that into wins. They're trailing Dallas by 1 right now. I it's not necessarily the most intriguing storyline, but I want to see who's the surprise team, because 2020 in every single sport that we've had restart, there have been teams that we would have not picked under normal circumstances to be anywhere near the top or competing, and they're one of the better teams in the league. Are we going to get that in the NBA? And that's essentially what I'm looking forward to in January. Are we going to get a Cleveland Brown, Buffalo Bill type team? Who's the team in baseball? The freaking Rays, things like that. Are we going to get that kind of where did they come from, who the hell are these guys type vibe in the NBA, or are we going to get business as usual? So I think the Hawks could be one of those teams where people go, where did they come from? Wow. And I'm very interested to see if they can keep that going in January. We'll probably run the show like every 2 weeks, maybe, because I feel like a weekly podcast sometimes isn't gonna go over well, because there are some weeks where there's just not anything going on. But do know that the NBA loves drama, so we will definitely make sure we stay up to date on that. Again, if you listen to the podcast, make sure you look out for our weekly DFS competitions. Pretty soon it's going to be just me, because I'm running Corey out, I'm running Gary out, I'm running Keith out, all of them. All of y'all going down at some point.
Y'all contributing to the post-COVID Corey vacation fund, so keep it going.
Oh, my God. Hey, look, I better be a part of that. I better be on the flight with you or something. I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been donating them $10. Matter of fact, we're going to hit up James Harden and see what he did during his offseason.
Hey,
maybe run it back.
We talking?
All right, man. I'll catch you next time.
All right, bro.
All right. This has been the IBN NBA podcast for the 2020-2021 season. This is our introductory podcast. I'll make sure that I do get us an official title, something that's catchy, and we'll make sure that we continue to put out content, like I said, at least every 2 weeks. Weekly podcasts for NBA just seem a little redundant for our group, so I'll gauge it, see what people think. As always, make sure you check out Keith Fleming and Joe Matt on their DFS. I'm not sure if they're going to be doing it for NBA. Corey's a really good plug for NBA DFS. Maybe him and Keith can start working something where they give out DFS picks for NBA. We will be bringing back our golf podcast at some point, which had a lot of winners over the 2020 season. Despite COVID, we still put out a couple winners. And then I'm going to work on the gambling podcast and kind of tweak it a little bit, see if we can't get some more content out there as well. And also, if you haven't checked it out, the Mod Pod is my political podcast that I put out every 2 weeks as well, with my co-host, who is a former roommate of mine, Paul Birdsall. We basically just talk about the current state of politics, just something a little off base, is not necessarily sports, just to mellow the mood out just a little bit. So there's plenty of content. Again, we do our weekly NFL podcast as well that you guys see, the hits and misses. We put that out every week as well. Support the brand, continue to support the brand. If you're not an all-star, join the all-stars as well. And then if you're not in the group and you just happen to be listening, join the group, okay? So this is IBS Jesus signing off.